Imagine a toy so iconic it practically wrote the playbook for pleasure. Allow me to introduce or reintroduce you to the Magic Wand, aka the Cadillac of Vibrators. The Magic Wand Original is a trusted companion in the journey of joy. Whether it's your first time chasing an orgasm or you're looking to give your partner a spine-tingling erotic massage, the Magic Wand should be your go-to. With powerful rumbles and several different rhythms and patterns, it's no wonder the Magic Wand has scooped up accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I'm so enamored with mine, I've customized my bedside table just to keep it within arm's reach at all times. But the magic doesn't stop with the original Magic Wand. The Magic Wand family has grown over the years, offering a variety of models to suit every lifestyle. Go cord-free with the Magic Wand Rechargeable. Embrace compact power without compromising intensity with the Magic Wand Mini. I love this Mini. Or the Micro, which is just teeny tiny and really powerful. Or enjoy a range of sensations with the Magic Wand Plus. Each model delivers the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original a legend. So are you ready to experience the magic? Visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to enchant pleasure seekers around the globe. That's sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Magic Wand, more than just a vibrator. Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Happy New Year, everyone. I've been reflecting on the incredible guests I've hosted over the last year and wanted to share some of the highlights from these interviews that really stuck with me. In today's episode, I break down the truths and myths about lesbian sex with writer Zara Berry. Dr. Drew Pinsky joins me and we talk about the differences between the way men and women think about pleasure. I talk to sex and relationship therapist Cindy Darnell about intimacy and eroticism and have a fascinating discussion with John Weiland about masculine and feminine energies and how they play out in the bedroom. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's gotta have her standards. Oh, my.
The women know about shrinkage.
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, go to sexwithemily.com and check out our website, all the great content we are updating every day for your sexual pleasure and happiness. And in case you missed it, take a listen to All Aboard the Booty Train. This was a fun episode from a few weeks ago that's a perfect complement to your sex resolutions this year. We talk about how to expand your sexual repertoire, and of course, we give a crash course in booty play, which I know you like. You can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts. Oh, and speaking of resolutions, it's contest time. It's still going. Our Better Lover 2018 contest. So I want you to just take a moment and think about where are you at with your love life, your sex life, your relationship right now, and where do you want to be in a year? So think about it. Write it down and send to me what changes you'd like to make this year. And if you do this, send me an email to feedback@sexwithemily with the title Better Lover 2018 to share your pledge with me for how you're going to be a better lover this year. Just make sure you get your entries in by Sunday, January 14th, and I'll pick four winners who are going to receive incredibly sexy prize packs. Because you know you still want some presents after the holidays, right? And you can always get more Sex with Emily on social all day long at Sex with Emily on Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, and Twitter. Now, on to the interviews. If you want to hear all the full episodes, look at the links in the show notes, which can be found at sexwithemily.com. Enjoy the show. I'm joined by writer, talk show host, and all-around badass millennial and smarty hottie Zara Berry. And I'm really excited for my guest here today.
Hi, Zara. So excited to be here.
This is so fun.
And I'm honestly a huge fan of yours. And I have been for a long time, like way before I started writing about sexuality on the internet.
How did you find it?
I think through Dr. Drew. Big Dr. Drew fan.
Oh, you are? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I grew up with like the Loveline era. Right. You know, I was a little young, but like I had older siblings. So yeah, I think I like discovered you through him maybe. And then I just think what you do is so amazing.
Thank you.
Like you're such a sex positive voice, and that's so needed.
Well, that's why you're here, because you're kicking ass. I mean, I love Zara. We met actually in New York.
Yes.
At the expo in September.
I don't remember.
Oh my God, this year's been insane. Oh, that was last year.
Yeah.
Who knows where the time has gone. And Zara, she's a New York based writer, talk show host, and I love all your writing. I mean, it's like she writes about sexuality, heartbreak, fashion, emotional discontent. It's like a roller coaster reading. Stuff, like in a good way, like exhilarating and you know, breakups and breakthroughs and breakdowns and just sex. It's all just so good. So I'm so glad you're here. You're going to share your insights on dating, mating, navigating sex as a millennial. I can't wait for you guys to hear what she has to say. Like, how are you doing?
I'm good.
You're in LA.
I'm loving being in LA. And it's been actually really interesting because I lived here when I was like very young. Moved here when I was 17 and I lived here till I was 22. And it was just like kind of when I sort of came out as a lesbian.
Right.
And I was like going to all these crazy like lesbian, I worked at Fred Siegel. It was very lost. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, but it was like this big coming of age time for me. And to come back now at 30 and kind of like, now I'm a writer and I sort of have like more direction and focus in my life. LA is like a different experience.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
I was like reading through all of your writing and social media. Yes. Oh my God. I'm like, wow. It was exhilarating, you know, like it's a thrill. It's a thrill to read everything.
You.
Like your heartbreaks and your sexcapades, like I said, and like breakthroughs. And so like, let's talk about a little bit like where you are today.
Okay.
So you say like you're a mascara lesbian.
A mascara lesbian.
Mascara.
Well, I say mascara because my mother's English and some reason that's like the only word. I can't say mascara. Like I've tried.
I'm from the Midwest, like air. I say long A's.
I would try because I get made fun of, but no. So I say mascara lesbian, but I guess it would be mascara lesbian.
Right. Okay, got it. Like lipstick lesbian.
Like lipstick lesbian, but I never identified with lipstick lesbian because when I think of making out, I don't think of wearing, I love lipstick, but like if I'm feeling hypersexual, I wear like a nude lip because I want to make out. Otherwise it looks like a bloody scene, you know?
Right.
So I identify with mascara. I love mascara.
Right. Well, you have great eyelashes.
Oh, thank you.
Looks amazing. So as you should. So you've always, no, you've had a whole bunch of different sexual experiences.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And so now you're in a committed relationship with a woman.
Yes.
And so what I think is interesting though is that you've gone through a lot, like you, when you were younger, tell me about your like sexual, when you first discovered you were.
You know what? I think I was talking about this with a friend last night. I first discovered that I was a lesbian when I was in the 7th grade and I got drunk with a bunch of my friends. Like we like stuck. It was like very like typical suburban dark story where like a bunch of like kids in the suburbs like raid the liquor like cabinet. And then we all ended up sort of like making out. And I remember afterwards and giving each other hickeys. We're like, oh, let's practice kissing. And I'm pretty sure I instigated it. But and then afterwards they were all laughing about it. And I remember feeling like, oh, like this kind of meant something to me. And like I could tell it didn't mean anything to them. It was just like, you know, like a friendly, you know how kids experiment with each other, whatever. But for me, it like haunted me and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And then I like started thinking about boys and I was like, I just, I realized that there was a disconnect.
Okay.
And I knew what lesbians were.
Right.
You know, I have liberal parents. I knew what they were, but I just also didn't, there wasn't lesbians in the media at that time.
No.
There was Ellen was kind of.
That's like it. Right.
That's it. You know, and I love Ellen to death, but I don't necessarily identify with her. So I was like, how, I was very confused because I'm such, so feminine, you know?
Well, you are so, but that's the thing. Is that you're like, I feel like you're probably always getting hit on by men. Not as much anymore.
Feel, no,
tell me,
so
explain
weird.
That to me. Yeah.
I actually am like so rarely around straight men. I feel like I'm always around women and gay men that when I am around straight men and they start hitting on me, I'm bewildered, you know?
Really? But like, do you come out and say like, what do you do? Are you like,
sometimes I play along for a second and then I'll like go in for the kill and mention my girlfriend just because it's funny to sort of see. I mean, that sounds
they're
so evil.
No, but they're like shocked, right? Horrible. Like they're always like, what? Like, cause they don't, I mean, yeah. You typically don't see, I mean, you do, we're in LA, yeah. We're everywhere, but you see it, but you don't also typically.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, see, I get it.
But I often will talk to straight men, you know, as if they're just like bros, and I'll start talking. And then when they
probably
realize,
like you because of that, though,
yeah,
because right? You're so comfortable.
Yeah. But then when they sort of connect it and they realize that I'm a lesbian, they're like, oh shit, you know, like I'm freaked out. But
and do they ever be like, I can let's
turn
just try
you?
To, yeah,
that, yeah.
I had a guy say to me, a gay guy says, like, well, what do you say? Like, if I went straight, I'm like, really? Are we really having these conversations? Like, you're not going to go straight because of me. And like,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
Like, you're like, this is so boring. Are you really having this conversation? Okay. So you wrote about, you've written a lot of things, but you wrote about like sex myths about lesbian sex.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that like, you know, I've been doing, you know, I've done thousands of podcasts and stuff, and I've had gay, straight, so many different people on the show. But I think that like, lesbian sex still really is this mystery to a lot of men and women. I mean, if they're just like confused by it, or they're like, do you hate penises? Like, how does it really happen? What, like lesbian Beth,
yes.
What is it?
Bed death
syndrome, all that stuff. But let's talk about like some of the myths.
Let's see. And I think you're so right. People are like fascinated by lesbian sex because I think that we are, lesbians in general are very elusive creatures.
Right.
I think gay men are more putting themselves out there, more open, but we're
absolutely
like a little mysterious.
People like don't, they really like, they're so confused. And I know like it's been a while since I've had someone like on the show, like I've had lesbians, gay, we don't get into it because like I feel like people know, but with you, it's like, this is what you do and you talk about it. So let's shed some light for some people.
Yeah. And I mean, look, for a long time, I always tell people this, people would say to me when I first came out, like, what's lesbian sex? And I'd be like, I'm not telling you, but it was because I didn't know.
Right,
and I was too embarrassed. And
I'll then, get like, back to you on that.
Yeah. Girls would be like, oh, like, did you have sex with her? And I'd be like, no, but I wasn't sure if I actually did because I didn't know what it was either.
How do you define sex?
I mean, how do you define sex? And there's so, and like, that's the other thing is that different lesbians define it differently. So some lesbians would say, you know, when you use a strap-on, it's sex, or when you, any kind of penetration is sex or oral sex. And I just say, anytime someone has an orgasm to me, it's sex. And when I said that to my girlfriend, she was like, oh, well, my number just got cut in half. Like, she like went down in how many people she thought she had slept with because she didn't define it like
okay,
that.
Okay. Yeah. Because some people are like, oh, orgasm. It's not about the orgasm. It's about the connection. So people think it's just like there's no, I guess people think it's, there's no penis. Well, there aren't penises, but like dildos or there's just, I don't know, oral. Or I mean, what are some of the.
The things I hear a lot are, definitely scissoring, people are like, that doesn't happen. For some reason, straight people are really protective of me with these kind of things. And my old editor would be like, oh, come on, people don't scissor. Like, Zara, isn't that stupid? People think like lesbian scissor. And I'm like, oh, I scissor.
Yeah, right. With your legs, like, you're kind of like your legs are coming together. Like, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I,
really,
I mean,
I
think
like,
it's complicated.
I would scissor. Right.
Yeah.
But it's not. Like, not every night. Like
not every night, but, like, people do. And I think people are always like, oh, that's a porn thing. But I scissor. I'm Zara Berry, and I scissor.
You're totally okay with that.
So what else do I hear? That I think that people think that we're all experts on oral sex, too.
Well, I hope you are, because I was hoping to pick your brain.
I mean, I'm an expert in oral sex. That's only just because I've had a lot of practice. But, you know, it took me a while, too. First time I went down there, like, just because I have the same parts doesn't mean I know what I'm doing. And women, every woman's body is so different.
Right.
And what she likes, I feel like with men and my experiences with men, it's pretty straightforward what they like.
Yeah.
And women, it's like each woman has a different trigger point. Some women, you know, like penetration. Some hate penetration. And each time you get a woman in front of you, you have to figure it out. You have to figure out what she likes and listen to her body. And I've definitely had plenty of sexual experiences with women where they didn't know, you know, what they were doing. It was like being with a guy almost.
Do they have women? Oh, they don't know what they're doing with you?
Yeah.
Do you feel
we're not all great lovers, unfortunately.
No, we're really not. But it can be taught.
I think so, yeah.
I exist here on the planet. But I feel like, and do you have a lot of women coming to you of like, oh, I haven't been with a woman and I want to be with you?
Yeah. I get people more of like come to me for tips. Like I have a lot of like readers that are bi curious and, you know, I don't even know how to talk to a woman. And that's why I try and talk about this stuff so openly, because I remember being like that.
Yeah. You
know,
started out
terrified.
There. So
yeah.
We get a lot of questions like that as well. So, and I know you've written about this extensively too, but what are some tips for women who are like, Jamie, he's in the other room who works with me. She was like just saying on the show last week that she's like, if it happened, like I might be interested. And I think there's a lot of women who just feel like more open about it, but they would not know where to start. So what would be some tips?
I mean, I think that the best thing to do if you're bi-curious is to get on Tinder, honestly, and be upfront and just say that you are bi-curious or bisexual and that you're, you know, looking to experiment, but you're inexperienced, because you don't want to, what lesbians hate is sort of being fooled. Like they don't want, like say they go on a date with you and then you realize, ooh, you know, I'm not into this. I'm only into men. It doesn't feel good.
Right.
You know?
Just like we wouldn't like it if a guy came up, you know, shut up and he was, you know, whatever. Married,
you don't want to be
misrepresented himself.
Totally. You don't want to be anybody's experiment. But then there are plenty of women who are down to experiment with you. So just be open about it. Be honest. I mean, there are plenty of women who are actually, I know tons of lesbians who are turned on by being the teacher. I'm not.
Right.
You know, I like someone who's more experienced than I am personally. I feel like I'm a leader in so many aspects of my life, like sexually, please.
That's how I feel too.
Do you feel like that?
Yes, because I've gone out with guys lately. I'm just like, I know he could use my help so much, but like I help like millions of people do the podcast every week. Yeah. I don't want to teach this guy. Like I want him to learn. I just want to be like, listen to some episodes and then we'll like go out again.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. So you want someone who's, I get it.
Yeah,
I can learn. This is our job.
Totally.
Like, I want, like, off time when I'm having sex.
Me
too. But I do think it's true. Yeah, I'm trying to think about, and I've, like, experimented. I've dabbled. Yeah. And I'm trying to think of what I think I just, maybe it was a little confusing at first. But you just, I mean, you just kind of, like, be honest.
Yeah.
And then once you get down there, like, what did I do? I'm trying to remember. I was a little drunk.
I mean, definitely with women, communication. You know, women like it, like I think, in my experience, like women love when you ask them what they like. And just, you don't have to pretend like you have it all figured out. Just be like, does this feel good? What do you like? You know, you can even say like, I don't really know what I'm doing. Can you help me? And I think a lot of like women are into that. They want to help you. And also like, listen to her body. I feel like with men, women, everybody, I'm sure you feel this way.
Yeah.
Like if she, you can tell if someone's responding to you. So don't get so in your head and worry about what you're doing. And instead put your focus on the person.
Right. Get out of your head, everyone.
Get out of your head.
I think they were so worried about what they're thinking and how they, but the information's right there.
Yeah.
Like pay attention. Like, cause you know, is her breath changing? Is she moving towards you, away from you? Like there's a lot you can tell.
Yeah.
In the moment. But I think just like, you know, our brains are, you know, large, biggest enemies sometimes.
I think
right?
That's the best sex tip I ever got was, it's funny. Cause my mother used to always, I was always shy growing up and she'd say, okay, if you're shy, put your energy on the other person, start asking them questions. And then I've sort of like translated that to sex. Like if you're feeling self-conscious, just instead fixate on their body. Like, are they in tune with you? Is this making them feel good? Are they moaning? And then before you know it, then you're into the, you're out of your head and you're into the sort of meditation of sex, which I think is when the best sex happens, when you're just sort of like when you let go, it's like dancing.
Exactly. That is the
best.
Your
body knows what to do. You know,
getting
it's the brain.
It is the brain. The brain is, I mean, I think like so many of the questions I can answer, it's like, I feel like I can't have an orgasm or I don't know what to do. And it's like, get out of your head, but you don't want to totally like get into trance. But there is a point where it starts to flow like
it's
dancing. You're not worrying. And it is true. Just like in life, like, you know, you got to give to receive that.
Yeah.
It's a really good tip that like when you're worried, just keep like giving, asking by giving, I mean like asking questions. Or saying like, what do you like? And I don't know, there's a lot of women though, I think I hear, they're like, oh, I don't know what I like gay, straight, whatever. They're like, I don't know. And that's when I was like, just masturbate, like figure it out. Like, how did you figure out what you liked? Did you always masturbate young age?
Totally, from a very young age. I mean, and you know what's really funny is I always tell people this is that when I first masturbated, I thought that it had given me HIV. Because I knew, is that such a weird story? But it just goes to show like lack of education does to people. Because
so
I knew that, you know, one of my mom's friends had passed away from AIDS. And I knew it was like something sexual, but I didn't know what sex was. And then I figured out that masturbation was something sexual, but I couldn't, you know, no one had ever talked to me about it. So I spent like 6 months in third grade, like third convinced grade. That I had HIV and that my parents were going to like hate me because I was selfish and I couldn't resist the temptation. And then finally somehow I connected the dots and it was like a huge win. Like I remember
poor girl.
I remember being like, oh, okay, I'm fine. But yeah, I started masturbating young, and I think it's so important.
I think it's the most important thing. I know. I mean, especially for women to figure it out, because I think a lot of women feel like their partner's just going to figure it out, or it'll just happen during sex. Yeah. And we just know that that doesn't, for some women, that doesn't happen.
No, and like, also, like, I never knew. Happen. No, me neither. And for me, I always thought that sex was like, you know, even as a lesbian growing up the way I grew up, I always thought that like it was, sex really wasn't for women to be enjoyed. You know, it was about pleasing the other person.
Right.
And I hear that all the time. Like, and you know, you think of high school and it was like, this girl gives great head, but you never heard rumors about like, oh, well, this guy is like
never.
Great at going down on girls ever. Like,
ever.
It, you know,
it was, guys didn't even do it. They didn't know. You're so right. It's always about this, like, or this slutty girl who was labeled as doing stuff. You're absolutely right. We are not. And I'm trying to change that. And I see with young girls, I know today, like 17, like high school, they're like same thing. Like it's about pleasing the partner.
Yeah.
They don't masturbate. They don't know what makes them feel good. So if you're young and you're listening, or your parents of young children, they don't know. They're not going to figure it out on their own. It's the same thing. And it's like horrifying, because I'm like, I really think things have changed. Like, I really think that young women today, young girl, would be different with all the sex out there.
Yeah.
But it's in many ways, it's not. It's about like pleasing the guy or looking good for them or keep putting out because of like a more or whatever
it
is.
Yeah,
just not the case. I'm going to welcome my guest, Dr. Drew Pinsky.
Hey there. It is fun around here. That's why I can't stay away.
I know, right?
Keep coming back.
You got to keep coming back.
For the pounds of lube, especially.
Dude, don't leave without pounds of lube. I got a backpack for you.
Lube.
Yeah.
That's
Dr.
Hysterical.
Drew, it's so awesome. Funny. So I never listen to my podcast. So I've been doing it for 12 years.
Yeah, I don't listen either. To mine, to anything I do.
Ever?
Never, almost never. My wife listens to stuff, so I sometimes hear it in the background.
Right.
And I cringe.
Right, exactly. But it's not even so much because my voice, I've already gotten over the fact that my voice is like this and I say way too much. It's more like I was there and I feel like do I really have to listen?
Yeah,
and if I have an hour, I want to listen to something else.
Absolutely. If I were going to evaluate myself, I'd probably listen for 5 minutes ago and I'd have many, many notes in 5 minutes.
Well, that's
me.
The thing. And then I want to change everything. So I just don't. But then, so you're coming back, you've been on the show. You were on one other time. There were two other times.
I'm sure it's
twice.
Maybe the last
twice.
Time we had a really good conversation.
We had a party. That was a party. Like, that was fun.
And then you saw me speak at the human gathering.
That's right.
You thought that stuff was interesting.
Exactly.
Different stuff than we were talking about.
Different stuff. But what I was going to say is, because that's what I want to talk about as well.
Okay.
So it was when you were on the floor and you were like talking about how, we were talking about happiness, first of all.
Yeah.
And you were talking about how, you know, it's this elusive thing and there's all these books on happiness and no one ever defines what happiness is.
Right.
And then you're saying, you know, it's actually about, you know, you were saying that you're grateful. If you're grateful a few times a day, that's what, you
that's
know, can make you happy.
That's
a sign
that's
that you
could
be happy.
And it also adds to happiness too, yeah.
It kind of adds to happiness. But then also when you were talking about, and this might be too much because we do have callers, we have things that we're doing.
It's a word away from sex a little bit, but go ahead.
But I don't know. I just, when you were talking about your experience, I think it was with your therapy, rational motive therapy. Is that what right?
Emotionally focused therapy.
Oh, God. Emotionally focused therapy. And you were talking about how you had the patient and you heard the...
Yeah, I hear these things and I feel these things. And
yeah.
It happens to me all the time, yeah.
And then that's, I think that's, but it's like the embodiment and it's the work.
Right.
And it's so a lot of what people are feeling.
Right.
They don't know what they're feeling and how it manifests in your body and how
you
learn to connect with people. And then you got on the floor and you were talking about our parents. You're like, if you're a parent, you have to mimic back their emotion. And then you got on your knees. And
well, this woman was like, how am I going to be a great parent? I'm like, do this. Get down to your kid's level. And I was trying to show and be face to face. Let your body attune. And when it does attune, guess what? Your heart rate will mirror the kid's heartbeat. Even your hippus, the pupillary movements in your iris will actually mimic your kid. And then just stay open and reflect back on your face and appreciation of what the child's experiencing. And that little model is an exchange that we can use in everyday life.
Right.
The mirroring in our face, women do that almost automatically. They do it very
subtly.
They do. You're doing a little bit of it right now, even with me. And I'm acutely aware of it because I had to really a little bit pronounced as a male in order to set the boundary and to show that appreciation of what they're experiencing. And if you remember on Celebrity Rehab, the patients used to give me shit about it and go, no, there he is with that sad face again. It's like, no, I'm signaling it's a different, I'm not catching your feeling, right. But I am deeply appreciating your feeling. And I'm signaling you, I'm not telling you, because telling goes to a different part of the brain. Right. The signal goes to the deeper right-sided holistic embedded part of the relationship.
And is that something that you think as a physician you learned it, or more through the therapy? Because I feel like you were talking about your therapeutic experience that allowed you to connect more with yourself and then with your patients and with everybody.
I was talking about my therapeutic experience as a patient. I was talking about my therapeutic environment as a practitioner. Right. And then I was talking about my disciple, what's the word for all, like the disciples?
Disciple?
Yeah, I was talking about all the people what were Jesus' followers called? Disciples.
Disciples, right? Yeah.
There's disciples out there that I am their St. Paul.
Right.
There's a guy named Peter Fonagy, whose stuff I'm describing now. There's a guy named Alan Shore. There's a guy named Stephen Porges. A guy named Dan Siegel. A guy named Bessel van der Kolk, who I forgot to mention at the event.
No, but
I'm telling you, these guys have worked this stuff out. And I listen and read their stuff like I'm reading the Bible. I'm just in awe of it. And so it's because deep application. It's the next 100 years. I'm telling you, it's the beginning of the next 100 years of understanding the human experience.
And I think that a lot of what we talk about is we're always saying, in Loveline, you should see a therapist. You should go to therapy. You should do this. You should do that. People, I don't know. It was another way of showing that how much that experience. Yeah. People don't really get it. They're like, I go talk about myself and pay $300.
There's lots of bad therapists too. And there's
so many
bad
therapists.
Behavioral therapies, which have evidentiary sort of practice associated with them. They work for short-term problems, but really, I think I said this, we should have a different sort of term for this sort of finding meaning, fully evolving mental
health
stuff.
That's where it's all good. Right. But I think that a lot of it is about your thoughts.
It is, but it's not mental health. It's like mental evolution or something. It's mental,
it's
realization.
Mindfulness.
No, it's realization rather than health. Self-realization again. We're back.
But
to
just
that.
As important, I don't know. Okay, let's. This is what I.
But
just
all our craziness comes out in relationships. Nowhere does relationships come out more than, and no craziness come out than in relationships.
That's why we all need a little bit of therapy. Yeah. Like I have a hard time, I think, too, with people who dating someone who hasn't. And I think we have a lot of callers today that we can help along that line. But what I want to talk to you about first is a little sex in the news.
Oh.
I want to talk to you about the dick click.
The what? When your ligament clicks.
No, that's not the dick click. Oh. It's new. This was in the news today. You were probably doing 16 radio shows. No, dude, listen to this. So there are plenty of male contraceptives in development at the moment, but a new switch device has been revealed, which may be the strangest of the lot. A new device called the dick click works in the same way as a vasectomy, but it's like an alternative.
Yeah.
It operates via surgically inserted valves.
I'm aware of this one.
Do you know this?
Yeah,
and there's literally a click on your penis they could be like, I want the sperm on. I want the sperm off.
It's not
Who's going to remember to
it's
do
not,
it?
It's not have been fully
what
researched.
What if you're it's really not, drunk not, or something?
I know. And reversible vasectomies have been tried a million times and they're sort of...
They don't work or they do what we were talking about before. I'm like, do they work?
They don't work reliably. And this is a company that really doesn't have the research yet to say they're going to be able to do this.
Have you seen the pictures of it? So this thing probably won't happen. Men won't want to take responsibility for this at all. But
it's a good idea.
I just want to show you the switch, you guys. We'll put this on our website, but look at this.
Yeah.
Put the switch in their scrotum.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally. That doesn't work.
Men won't take
responsibility.
When you look at the penis implants, the penis pumps, they're kind of like devices like this. But that's a lot of hardware. It's not a minor thing. It's a big deal. So I had read about that. And it started like, it's not going to, probably not going to happen.
Bet. None of this is going to happen. The male pill won't happen because men were like,
pill
I
will
might
happen.
Get cramps.
No, male pill will happen. Something like that will happen. Because it's not about, they cannot do it hormonally in men. You can't
but
do it.
They can't stop the sperm.
Right. You can't. So it's going to be some sort of blocking agent, either blocks capacitance. But before the sperm can penetrate the egg, it has to do something called capacitance.
Right.
The head of the sperm has to change in a certain way that helps it penetrate. So it's either going to interrupt with the movement of the tail or the capacitance, I think.
And you think it's really going to happen?
Someday. It's take a while.
I just feel like that we're spending so much time on the female pills and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That they're not going to. The men wouldn't take it. They wouldn't be responsible. I don't know. Okay, that's another thing. Should we get to some calls, Drew? Is there anything else going on in your world?
Oh, finally. No. I was going to say, finally, they have finally they're admitting, guess what? Oral contraceptives cause depression in female. Oh my God.
They're just saying that.
They're just really sort of coming out with it in a big way. And it's like, no, how many times on Loveline do we say, are you on the shot? Are you on progesterone
every
pills?
Day, every day.
Right. That's right.
Why don't they warn women at all? I would think that there's more information now, but now we know the fact. I mean, Anna,
and screws
referring
their libido
back to
flesh, up.
Everything.
And, oh, my God. Anna, I mean, did Anna have a problem with this?
Anna? No. Did I say Anna?
I thought that's what you said.
Oh, no. I said, and on the last show, no, but Anna, I don't know if Anna did, but when I was on the last show, we were talking about how women have no information about sex. They're disconnected from their bodies. They, younger girls, like when they're first
Even
having sex.
Still now?
Yes, we talked. So you're like me. See, I didn't remember either why everyone loved the show.
Because
everyone here loved it too with us. So I was like, okay, I'll listen. Yes, I ran. I'm like, I'm going to listen to the show. And I'm like, oh, this was pretty good. We talked all about how women don't under. What did I even wrote it down because I still don't remember.
I'm sure
now.
What I was talking about though was how mystified it makes me that in this day and age, how that's possible.
That's what I was upset because I had family and friends who have kids who are 17 and they're like, sex hurt. I don't understand sex. I don't masturbate. Gross. And it hurts inside of me. The penis, the condom, ew. And they don't understand. They don't understand sexuality. They don't understand why they should masturbate. They don't even know why they don't want to be vulnerable. So they don't even want relationships with anybody. So they're just having sex to please the guy. Nothing's changed because I felt that way.
Right. And that means there's something biological in this, right? And so we have to, there's a difference. And guess what, everybody, men and women are different biologically. So you have to help them with that biology. You have to treat the men, you're trying to get them not to do something.
Right.
Like, but you can't get them to stop. And with females, you're trying to get them to engage with it and to be a part of it.
Exactly.
You know, it's funny. I saw something on, do you ever watch that show? Oh, this is way out of your demo, but Frankie and the
I'm just
thing.
Because everyone's talking about it. Yeah, I've seen one episode.
Okay, well, Susan loves it. My wife loves that show. And in there, they eventually get a vibrator business. It reminds me of you a million times. The second, third season, they really get into this vibrator business. And one of the character, a male, young male's female partner, they have sex. They do it for a long time. She says it's great. And he leaves the vibrator behind, the mom's vibrator device, which is supposedly this wonderful, super special device.
They are super special.
I'm sure something like that exists in your closet already.
We'll get some treats.
Yeah. And he hears her after they've had this long session masturbating and making a different sound, and it freaks him the hell out. And I thought, oh, that is so much about the man. And he confronts her. He goes, look, how come I couldn't make it? This is like the man. We want you to have the ultimate experience with our penis.
Right, exactly.
How
that's
come,
it.
How come you? Well, I couldn't. He was like so upset. She goes, oh, no, it's not better. It's just different. We're like, okay, here's what I heard. Blah, 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 blah.
Exactly. And it wasn't my penis. My penis was not in the room.
But we have, when you say it's different and it sounds more intense, we just hear we missed out. We didn't hit it right. It's weird. And we can't imagine. We can't literally can't imagine that there's an equivalent experience that's better or good that's not about orgasmic intensity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're fully in that sort of biological zone in our sexuality.
No, that's true.
Even though we appreciate the connection, we like the intimacy and stuff, in terms of the orgasm part, there's an orgasm. It's either intense or super intense, and that's it.
And if it's super intense and you weren't there and it was different, then it's the ego too.
It's more than ego because it's not
biology.
But it's a language we don't understand. Because I still, as someone who tries to be very attuned to all that, I really don't understand. I watched that scene. I went, I have no idea what she's talking about. And yet that's a real thing. I know that's a real thing.
You say,
and I really don't know what she's talking about.
It would be like if you used, let's say, a fleshlight, like a male masturbation sleep. Or like all you could think about is like, that's still your hand though. I mean, I guess a vibration doesn't feel.
No.
You're just saying having an orgasm with a vibrator, not a penis, is not. What do you
mean? No. See, you don't understand what I'm saying.
I understand the way you don't understand.
Right. That's the craziness here.
Men are from Mars.
Men will have more intense experience based on who they're with, novelty, what their eyes are perceiving, and what you're experiencing.
Right.
That's the rest, right?
Is that, is there anything I need to be there plus with the vibrator? Signs? I'd rather be with a man and like
more noise than the vibrator. I'm already jealous. More noise than the vibrator. What are you talking? Huh?
Maybe my orgasm more. Maybe you said the orgasm sounded different on the TV.
I know, and you just said you make more noise than the vibrator.
I'm
jealous for your partners. I'm immediately jealous.
I make a lot of noise.
Right? Am I right? Look, there's another man sitting here. He knows I'm
Michael. What? You'd be jealous, right?
Yes. It's weird. And there's no reason. I understand it's totally
irrational.
But
what about when you masturbate? Isn't it different? Like,
no. It's just whatever we're looking at. It's what we're looking at.
Yeah, but then how couldn't we? But women are threatened all the time by male masturbating. They're like, I don't understand.
We're not threatened. We're hurt. We're disappointed, right?
But women are disappointed all the time by their partners who watch porn. They're like, oh my God, does he want me to?
They're threatened. We're not threatened. We're like, why? I'm hurt. Why can't I do that?
Because you don't vibrate. But you just can't. Let's bring one in.
Let's do it.
There's actually ones that can attach to your penis or fingers. We could turn your penis into a, like, wrap something around it.
Yeah, but then you guys won't. You won't bring it all together like
no,
that.
We
you
don't, would.
Then you go, no.
Until you left, and then we take it off and we leave that here. Let me take it off your penis before you walk out the door. I know. It's all very confusing. God, okay, we're gonna take some calls.
All right, let's do it.
But this is a good time.
Right? I mean, we didn't talk about this at all, and it caught my attention yesterday.
I was just saying we talked about women and sexuality and how confused they are.
But this is that difference that is a perceptual difference.
And we're not teaching kids.
Well,
about
but it's the perceptual difference is so profound that we don't understand what each other are talking about. And here you and I are trying to understand it, and we can't do it because it is such a different experience for men and women.
I know. So people have to go easy on themselves, I think, too, because it's like relationships. It's going to be a challenge if you choose to be a member of that.
But that's just the sexuality part. I mean, then you layer in all of our histories and psychologies and interpersonal craziness. Then here we go.
That's why I'm really happy living alone with my 16 vibrators. Truly, and dating. And then I have a choice to go home. Okay, we're going to.
Anybody interesting?
No, not yet. I have like 3 dates.
I hope they're listening.
They are listening. Here's the problem. So I'm dating guys. I'm meeting guys.
If they weren't upset enough about knowing they couldn't give you the certain sound with their penis, now they're truly crushed. Well done, Emily. Well
different
done.
Different sounds.
That was a little,
like
castrating ball buster. I never knew that.
Women make different noises too. Like you know, like evolutionarily speaking, wasn't it when they were with a man, a different man? It was like their mating call. Like the more sound, when they're made noises louder, screams. It was because their partner was coming home and they were like, you know, they were. Like, we're talking about, like, cavemen. When they would pull.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why. Like, it's all about, like, mating calls.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm, like, mating call with my vibrator.
No, I understand, but it's something that your actual mates are concerned
they
about.
They are listening, some of them, but because they find out what I do.
I know.
And then they listen, and then he's like, so you're going to bring his lube? He sent me, like, he sent me an eggplant emoji as a joke today. I have a date tonight. And then he's like, I wish there was a lube emoji. I'm like, we've never met, and you're talking to me about lube, but you've been listening to my podcast.
How inappropriate. How dare
he? Cancel? What are you doing tonight?
I'm always getting you to cancel dates. I don't know.
I know. Okay. So, Drew, drdrew.com, by the way. Is
that
still what we
you.
Said, everyone?
Please. Yes, yes.
I wouldn't
please.
Have known that had I not listened to our answers.
All our podcasts.
Really interesting to listen.
Yeah.
To listen about drdrew.com. You've a million podcasts, which just go there and
I got This Life, got Weekly Infusion. We have Dr. Drew podcast. We have the Me and Adam podcast. So if you have anybody, fans of Loveline out there, Adam and I are still together.
There are.
We're contemplating, Mike and I are contemplating doing one.
Been a podcast?
Because a lot of people are like,
Mike Atherwood, who was the other host. Yeah, a lot of people, we have a lot of international listeners who might not know about Loveline. Okay. So you guys are going to do another podcast
in
your
spare
time. Yeah. You could just do it at the KBC or whatever, right?
Yeah, we could. Yeah, good point.
Okay, good. Should we give a shout out to our sponsors and we'll be right back? Thank you everyone for listening to this show and thank you for supporting our sponsors. We love them and we only like talk about people and work with brands and sponsors that we actually use, try, believe in, and we hope you will too. We'll be right back. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread, so here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. I hope you guys are enjoying the episode. The next half features Australian sex and relationship therapist Cindy Darnell and John Wineland, an expert speaker and teacher in the practices of masculine and feminine energy and spiritual intimacy. I'm here with Cindy Darnell, one of Australia's leading sex and relationship therapists. She flew around the world just to be here with me today. I know you were here for other reasons, but Cindy Darnell is one of Australia's leading sex and relationship therapists. She is amazing. I've been hearing about her through my good friend Elle Chase, sex educator, who's also here in the room for years. And she just explained, she said she's like the Emily Morris in Australia. Cindy, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to the show. We have a lot of listeners in Australia. And you're just so impressive. Everything you've done.
Thank you, darling. You're impressive. Going through your website,
your blogs, and all your amazing stuff you've going on. It's super impressive. And I'm glad that you're here and that you made it into the studio.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here. I love being in the US.
So tell me a little about yourself, because you have an interesting niche, connecting with couples and singles and mm-hmm. working people in relationships. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit about how you, I wanted to sign up on your website.
Oh, good. Stuff.
I was like, wow, you really can help people with anything, you know?
I really can.
You actually see, patients, clients.
Which yeah, I see clients.
Clients,
yeah.
one-on-one, couples.
One-on-one, two-on-one, yep.
So yeah, tell me a little bit about how you work.
So I call myself a sex and relationship therapist. That's the most accurate description, I guess, for what I do. And what that means is I work in a therapeutic context, so I'm a qualified psychotherapist, but I specialized in sex and relationships because it's something that I think a lot of people still really struggle with, particularly in Australia, around the world as well, because it is such a taboo. And a lot of relationship therapists tend to not want to do, or they've not been trained in managing sex stuff, because I think the narrative that is so common is that sex and relationships are the same thing. And that if you're a relationship therapist, then you must also be a sex therapist. And they're actually really quite different fields. They're complementary, but they're not exactly the same, like coffee and milk. You know, they go great together, but you don't need to have them together. Right. You can have them separately. So my interest in sexuality and relationships has been, I think it really started in sexuality about 20 something years ago. I had the pleasure of meeting Annie Sprinkle and Barbara Carellas when I was very, very young. And Barbara Carellas and I in particular formed a very strong friendship back then. And so she's been a mentor to me for many, many years. And so much of the work that I do has been influenced by her ideas and values. And even though she's not a therapist, she's very much someone that I credit with kickstarting my career in Australia 20 years ago in this field. So I've gone on since then.
For people who don't know who Barbara Carellas is, could you?
So Barbara Carellas is from New York, and she's the author of Urban Tantra, among other things. And she also is, I think, one of the world's leading Tantra experts. And she's also one of the world's pioneers in teaching Tantra from a non-gender specific aspect. So she has sort of blown the whole idea of sort of divine masculine and divine feminine mm-hmm. out of the water, and has really pioneered a whole new approach to Tantra, which is all gender inclusive. And she's amazing. And her partner is Kate Bornstein, who is well known for being a very well loved trans activist, and most recently on the Caitlyn Jenner reality show.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They have both been kind of started with my sex aunties.
I love it. But they were here, but you've stayed in touch with them over the years.
Absolutely.
She was your mentor. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it started with that, and then you got your degree in therapy.
Yeah. So I went and studied therapy first. I was just a regular, garden variety psychotherapist first. And then I found that the therapeutic community in Australia and internationally is on many levels quite conservative, especially when it comes to sex, because there's a lot of misunderstandings about even the concept of what is sex, what is normal sex, who has it, who's allowed to have it, and the notions around all the taboos and what's allowed and what's not allowed really throws people. And because, we've all pretty much grown up in some version of a sex negative culture, if you haven't learned to talk about sex in helpful and meaningful ways, even if you're a trained therapist, You can be trying to be helpful with your clients and still make mistakes if you're feeding in to old ideas that are limiting and shaming of people's sexuality. And I don't just mean their orientation. I mean their practices, what right. they actually do.
But the relationship that the relationship therapists do, I agree, because yeah. I feel like people, that it is so different, and that I actually think a lot of my listeners who call and who email the show, I'm like, people need sex therapy more than yeah. need relationship therapy.
Yeah, well, it's complementary.
It is complementary, but the fact that you know both, and most, and I understand that most relationship therapists really don't.
They don't.
It's a whole different
way. Really don't.
And how would you explain, I think you do it well on your website, but how could you explain the difference, what someone would get from relationship therapy and sex therapy?
Well, it would depend on the problem that they're having, because I think we all get tricked into different beliefs about sex and relationships because of the narratives that we are taught from a very young age. And this happens through movies and books and news and just, you know, common assumptions about how things are. And I think one of the biggest things is that intimacy and eroticism are the same, and they're really not. Because you can have intimacy that is very sort of vulnerable, making heart connected, all that kind of, you know, yummy, mushy, security-oriented stuff. And that can actually put out the fire of eroticism exactly. for a lot of people.
Cancels it out, right.
And that can be problematic for people in long-term relationships, particularly people in long-term monogamous relationships. How do we navigate that space between wanting to feel safe and wanting to feel hot? You know, so this is where it becomes a particular skill in dancing between those two points on the spectrum and what is possible, and also engaging people in conversations about what's normal. Because I think a lot of folks get very, very invested in being normal, as in sort of in contrast with being content, that people really want to be normal. They like, you know, they'll say to me, how often should we be having mm-hmm. sex? You know, and they want some sort of like, you know, 1.7 times a week or whatever. And instead, I'll say to them, first of all, what kind of sex are you talking about? And then it's like, why do you want to be normal? Why do you care what other people are right. doing? What is it? What matters to you? And people spend so much energy on trying to be normal right. and very little energy on trying to be content or trying to be happy.
It's so true.
And it takes them away. It distracts them from where they could actually find the contentment that they're looking for.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many things in what you just said. I'm like, I want to talk about all of them, because I do feel like, well, first of all, we get, you know, hundreds of emails here a day, questions, and I feel like everybody just, like, at the end of the day, like, am I normal? Is it okay? Mm-hmm. Just tell me I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Tell me okay.
It's like, the number one question,
like,
yeah.
Right? Like, is it normal? And it's like, how does it feel to you? Obviously, if it's harmful to your life, if something's, you know, if you're, for example, with porn, if you're watching too much porn mm-hmm. and it's a problem, if you can't go to work and you can no longer have an sure. erection, or then we could talk about it. But most things people are worried about are, they're fine. It's okay to express mm-hmm. your sexuality yeah. and giving people permission mm-hmm. to find out what is hot for them and yeah. what works for them.
Yeah.
So I think that's such a great, interesting way to describe it. Like that, why does everyone really care? I was like, you're fine, you're mm-hmm. fine, don't trip on it. But also when you're talking about working with couples, so like one of like the top questions we get asked, and probably think that you deal with, is libidos, like mismatched libidos in couples yeah. because of what happens in that long-term relationship where intimacy does kind of, you know, stamp out desire
yeah.
and they all cancel it. You know, we get close and comfortable, you know, mm-hmm. and we become one, but yet yeah. we don't want to have sex with our partners. And people always say, you know, and then they go to a relationship therapist only. Yes. And I'm like, well, you just keep talking about the same issues over and over again, and you're never going to get down into yeah. what's really going on.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing with sex therapy, you kind of help them untangle that, probably remove resentments that have built up over time.
Or, yeah.
But then also in dealing with, it's interesting, intimacy versus eroticism. So if they come to you and they're like, well, I don't even know what you mean, but like, do you help them identify what's erotic to them and share yes. fantasies and stuff like
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Well, yes. And I don't necessarily think that sharing fantasies is always the helpful thing
not
to do.
Not all fantasies.
Yeah. So sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not. But helping people work out what it is that turns them on.
That's in what contrast, I meant by fantasy.
Yeah. But in contrast with what it is ways. They want to have in a relationship, because what we lust after sometimes can be very different to what we want in a partner, in a life partner. And that is, I think, a relatively common quandary for folks. And it's something that we are not equipped to manage, because our sex and relationships education at school doesn't navigate that ambiguity, you know. And for a lot of people, what's hot is the ambiguity, is that area of, oh, I don't know about this. And that for a lot of people is sexy. Do you want to open a bank account with someone that makes you feel a bit unsafe? Not necessarily, but it can be a real turn on to go, oh, you know, what is it about this person that's so intoxicating, but we're not going to get a mortgage together.
Exactly. So how do you keep them? So what is it with, I know it's not just one answer, but how do you help couples fan those flames again and feel like get that ambiguity back when they're like, we've been living together and we own a house and have six children?
Yeah. Look, it's not easy. I can tell you that. But it does involve what I call a degree of self-inquiry. So you need to go back and look at what your motivations for having sex are. Now,
yeah, okay, let's go back to that. So they have to think about...
They have to think about what their motivation is. So if they are looking for a motivation that is what, you know, like lust-oriented, that they want to feel that lusty kind of hot energy that you feel when you first meet somebody, you might not get that again in a long-term relationship. I'm not saying that you won't, but you might not. So I often refer to it as that kind of intention of sitting at the, you're trying to get to a destination, but you're sitting at a bus stop and you're waiting for a bus that never comes because you're waiting to feel in the mood, you're waiting to feel hot, you're waiting to feel excited, and that bus isn't coming. And in the meantime, you're sitting at the bus stop and all these cars are going past and Ubers are going past and your friends are going past, taxis, everybody's going, you know, do you want to ride? Do you want to ride? And you're like, no, I'm fine. I'm just going to sit here and wait for the bus. And you sit and you sit and you sit and you wait for years for this bus that never comes. And in any other situation, if you had a destination to get to, you would walk if you had to get there. But for some reason, when it comes to sex, we are so invested in having lust be the motivator that we will sit and wait for that bus even if it doesn't come.
Right. And we don't even investigate what, yeah.
And we don't investigate other modes of transport. If we want to get to a place, we might have to get there in a bunch of different ways. And if that bus isn't coming, that's going to be okay. How else can we get there? Can we catch a ride with somebody else? Uber, taxi, whatever. And that's the thing with sex is that folks get really locked into it. It has to look a certain way and it has to be a certain way and it has to be like it is in the movies or it has to be like it was when I was 16. And it's like, it's not going to be
so you
that
break
way.
That down. You break
absolutely.
Down the
and that
the
can
myths.
Take a bit of while.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, I was going to ask you about, because sex education here is abysmal. Mm. We don't get any sex education.
In Australia, it's the same.
So, yeah, I mean, Australia, because I told you, like, we do have so many, hello to all my Australian listeners and all my listeners, But yeah, I was just wondering why the huge influx lately also of listeners. I don't know if like what you're saying is it just even you're at, it's less there, even less education, less
I don't know
education.
That it's less, but it's just sex is not something that's necessarily socially talked about. I mean, there's a presence of sex in the media. But it tends to not be especially robust. It tends to be very kind of light and it tends to be sort of very focused on being normal. There's not a great exploration of sort of alternative sex practices or alternative relationships. That is slowly starting to happen. But folks are still, you know, trying to playing the normal game, I think, in a lot of ways. And slowly, slowly, that's going to start opening
up
when we get more access to more information.
Right. Is there anything that you see as a difference, though, between you've spent a lot of time in the States and Australia that's kind of a different kind of approach to sex, besides not talking about it? Is there anything, I don't know, trends or things have come up lately that you're like, oh, that's interesting in Australia?
I think...
Or is it all the same?
It's pretty much all the same in terms of the information that's fed to us through the media is similar to what's going on here. But in terms of like when I teach classes in Australia and when I teach classes in the US, I'm often amazed at how much more open Americans are with their personal information in public spaces.
Right?
Australians would never, ever
ask those kinds of
questions in public. They would come up one at a time and, you know, I'll be at an event for an hour and a half afterwards answering questions one by one that would happen in a public forum in the US.
We're like, I was having anal last night with my girlfriend.
Like Australians would never do that.
Right,
no
right,
way.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's it. But really, it's just sex. It's just this big enigma with sex that I agree with what you're saying, that we all think we will work on every other part of our life.
Yeah.
Well, anything we want to be good at or we want to strive, we want to achieve goals, like we'll work really hard on our career, on our health. Like if we want to like run a marathon, we'll train for that, our spirituality. But sex is like this mystical thing that we believe should just be amazing and perfect all the time because it was really good during that glorious honeymoon phase of the first few months. Mm-hmm. And it's magic. People think of sex as being this magical thing and when it's gone, it's poof.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I spend so much time, you know, as I'm sure you do, just trying to get people to what, even just the basics of it. Like, it's going to take some work. The bus, you're going to have to look at where you're going, but it's like fun. It's like, this is an interesting kind of work. This is the best kind of work you could do. Yeah. It'll help every other area of your life. Mm-hmm. So I just...
I think it's a process. I mean, it never ends. You know, I've been studying sex in various forms for over 20 years, and I still feel like I don't know everything. Right. I know a lot of stuff, but then I think I get to a point where I know a thing, and then it changes, and I'm like, ah, actually, no, it's not that. Exactly. It's something else.
That's my guest, John Weinland.
Hi,
John. I just love I'm going to bring you in now. I'm going to go through some things here, but John's awesome. I'm really excited to have you here today.
Thank you.
We were talking a little before the show about all the questions we get asked from listeners, and I was like, a lot of it is about, like, how do we keep that sexual attraction alive, and what is sexual attraction? Mm. Like, if we don't have it at the beginning, can we build that? And then when you're in a long-term relationship, you know, we never want sex at the same time. How do we really connect? How do we enhance intimacy? And what John brings to the table is he's a coach. And how would you explain your work exactly?
Yeah, it's a difficult
thing. I tried. I was like, I'm going to come up with one sentence. And I said, I'm just going to ask him.
Yeah. I teach sexuality, right? I teach men and women. So I teach sexuality, spiritual intimacy is what I call it. And embodiment, like what's it mean to be... sort of bring yourself fully into your body and then have sex versus having sex as a way to kind of get into your body. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What that does. And then I also work with people teaching meditation. I teach movement. I teach all kinds of things in between, but mainly it comes down to how do I deepen my relationship? How do I have a better relationship? How do we have better sex? How do I communicate with her? How do I make her happy? That happens a lot. Like, men really want to know, like, why can't I make her happy? I love her. She loves me, but she's always pissed.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, but really, like, I feel like I'm responsible for my own happiness.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If someone doesn't make me happy, I understand what you're saying, though, that, that women, like, we want our partners to fill all these things for us.
Right.
But
right.
Ultimately.
Well, that's a tricky one because, self-sufficiency is a beautiful thing, right? But if you're too self-sufficient as a woman, right? So women are well ahead of men and actually passing men in the capacity to earn money. In 20 years, women are going to make more money than men across the board. We know that. When a woman is self-sufficient everywhere in her life, fantastic. Happy everywhere in her life, fantastic. And the relationship can only be as good as the states that both people bring to it. So yeah, of course. However, what the masculine craves is to be able to lead someone who wants to trust him someplace that she can't lead herself. So what I see with women a lot is they're super successful. Most of the women I work with are super successful, but they bring that self-sufficiency to the relationship and they don't offer the place where they actually need a masculine partner. Or it could be a feminine partner, right? Could either way, but they don't allow their self-sufficiency to drop away at the crucial moments of relationship and sex. And that actually pushes men away.
Yes. So I see what you're saying. And I was kind of just being like, I'm responsible for my own happiness. I get it. I've been with many a man who I'm just like, ugh, why, when I'm with you, I feel worse after. And I'm not saying that I haven't felt worse or guys haven't made me. But I do think that I am probably one of those women for sure. And I wasn't always, you know, it's like at this point I take care of myself. I'm successful. I have really good friends. I have a lot of issues too, but I could see that I could possibly be coming across that way. And then guys are like, well, I don't see where she needs me. And it's not necessarily like, I need you to pay my rent or I need you to, but in other ways that I could soften. And I always thought of myself as like, but I'm so feminine. I'm so, you know, but there is a certain energy, the way I move, the way I talk, the way I, you know, what I would offer to men. So what do you tell these women? Where would you start with me? That just turns to a therapy session. Do you guys all mind? Because I need a little help.
So, I'm not, there's nothing wrong with that.
I know.
It's all great to be, you know, in the stages of relationship, we go from this place of give me what I want, right? Like give me what I want to this place of let's make it about us, right? Let's make it, I'm sufficient, you're sufficient. We're whole human beings and that's beautiful. But what happens, what gets created in that place where both people are self-sufficient and they're kind of living their own lives, but they don't work on the, what we call sexual polarity, meaning the celebration of their opposites. then they become like magnets that rub against each other, right? And if you take a magnet that rubs against another magnet and they were attracted, but they're just constantly, it'll take away the attraction.
Exactly.
So normally what happens is that the attraction starts to diminish because the masculine partner, we're talking about women specifically, the masculine partner wants to be, okay, so we'll dive right in.
Yeah, let's dive right in.
The masculine partner wants to penetrate.
Uh-huh.
Like the masculine in me, the masculine in you, like the masculine wants to penetrate. We want to penetrate the world. We want to penetrate energy. We want to penetrate.
Right.
And if there's not an invitation to penetrate some part of you, like not your business, not your, you know, not stuff that you're handling just fine, but the depth of your heart, right?
Oh, penetrating my heart.
Yeah, penetrating
you
your heart.
Be like, open.
Yeah.
Oh, and like vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah, yeah.
So annoying.
Right, right.
That again. Okay.
So when you're self-sufficient and you're holding that back, then we're like, well, what the fuck am I doing here? Like,
right.
Where's you know, we actually get nourished by your opening, surrender, that kind of thing.
So we'll talk about embodiment in a minute because I want to go back to the masculine and feminine. So when I was thinking about this show, I was like, I could talk to you for 6 hours. So masculine and feminine energy, though, I think that we all sort of understand that we all have a masculine and feminine within us. And sometimes for example, we were saying I might lead with the masculine and how do I play with my feminine. Is this something that we could kind of explain, go to a little bit more, finish this and then kind of
move into something else? It's really good to define these terms.
Yeah, let's define them.
Yeah, you're right. Everybody has a masculine and feminine.
Mm-hmm.
But at our core, we have one or the other. So those of, you know, those listeners, man or woman, right, who prefer to be penetrated, like prefer to be pinned with some, you know, by somebody that they trust, ravished.
Right? Ravished. So, like, so we're talking sexually penetrated.
Sexually,
now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So your
now
sexual
we're back.
Essence,
you're talking about sexual,
yeah,
not my heart.
Yeah. Well, it's both. I mean, there's no disconnection,
true,
right?
True.
There's no disconnection.
Penetrate me all over.
Yeah.
Baby.
So, you know, the great masculine gift is that I'm going to ravish your heart through your body. Like that's the masculine gift to the feminine. But
that's hot.
But for a feminine being, she prefers to be penetrated. She prefers to be ravished, right? Well, the masculine being prefers to do the ravishing, right? Prefers someone to surrender to his leadership or his heart or his consciousness. And so that's how you can tell what your essence is, right? What you prefer sexually. Now, a lot of people these days want to go back and forth, and that's awesome.
Right.
But if they don't nourish their essence and they don't live in their essence, then there's this sense of dissatisfaction. There's this sense of not feeling like they're really being, could be who they are. And they don't attract the opposite. So what I see with a lot of women is that their essence is totally feminine and they want somebody that they trust to lead them relationally, sexually, that kind of thing. Take me someplace I can't take myself.
Right.
Right. That's the value. Yeah, right. Please. Like this is what I hear from women all the time.
Take it.
Take me someplace I can't take myself emotionally, sexually, you know, lead me that way. Right. But to do that, they've got to be a magnet for somebody that wants that. And
right.
And so sexual polarity is the celebration actually of the essence, the masculine essence in a man or a woman, but typically it's a man, and the feminine essence in a man or a woman, but typically it's a woman. And when you have those two extremes magnified, it creates an arc of what we call sexual polarity, mm-hmm. like the South Pole and the North Pole,
right.
You know, yin and yang. I mean, this is not new stuff. People have been talking about this for thousands
exactly,
of years.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why this is also, yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, this is...
It's tried and true.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're bringing it up.
So that's why many long-term relationships, because I know this is a question
yes.
listeners have, why they're always asking, why is there no attraction?
Right.
Right? Because they're not, they have a lot of resonance, which is beautiful. Resonance creates intimacy. Intimacy is the we're the same. Like I'm human, you're human. You know, I have a heart, you have a heart.
Mm-hmm.
I might be afraid, you're afraid. But that's not very hot, right? I mean, it's beautiful and it's one pillar of sexual intimacy, but the other pillar has to be, let's celebrate the difference. Like what makes you feminine at your very core? What's the essence of feminine? And the essence of feminine from how I've studied and how I teach it is the essence of feminine is I move love through my body, right? And the more I can move love through my body, the more someone with a masculine essence who's essence is I'm consciousness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your listeners might freak
know,
out right
keep,
now, but I'm going to
no,
go there.
Guys, go there.
But
stick with us, guys. I promise.
I am
we'll
at the essence. I am at the essence that which never changes. Like, I don't change. Like, the masculine in me is the same always. Mm-hmm. The feminine is changing all the time. So you get this, that's why in workshops we teach the men to actually be still and the women to move, because you put those two together and you can see it. It's just like immediate energetics, immediate sexual polarity, immediate heat. And most couples don't practice this. They're doing the same thing at the same time again and again and again.
Right.
And they don't actually practice sexual polarity, which is like any skill, playing piano, doing yoga, you know, anything. You have to practice it.
I always say this. It's like sex is a skill. I think we all assume for some reason that sex, we should automatically have all the answers, know how to be really good at sex, whatever that means for you. And it shouldn't be work. And what else in your life are you great at that's really important to you that you didn't have to work at?
Yeah.
And it's a skill.
Yeah.
And so it's okay. And that's the other thing that is interesting after 12 years of doing this and reading all of your emails and talking to everyone is that people are truly every single day surprised that it happened. They're like, wow, sex was so great, Emily, the first 3, 6 months, year, and now it's not. What do I, like, they're the first person that it's happened to, right? Because people are like, I don't understand and I can't get it back. And this is part of the practice. This is going to happen. I'm like, let's prepare for it. And then here's what we do about it.
Yeah, well, there's so many reasons why that happens, right? I mean, you know, they've proven now that once you commit to somebody, like once you move in together, or decide to get married or have a baby or some kind of commitment, you're destined to relive your childhood programming. Like, it's now proven. So we're going to attract people that do the same shit that our family did.
Exactly.
We're going to, if we don't attract them, we're going to take the person who comes and we're going to actually make them do that. Right.
Right. Yeah, self-fulfilling prophecy.
We're going to make them do that. You know, Imago therapy is a beautiful mm-hmm. approach to this. And they've explained all this. So we're going to do
Imago?
That. Imago therapy.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Imago. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
And so what to do is it's not a problem. We all do it, but most of us are unconscious about it.
Exactly.
So we got to get conscious, like, oh, I'm doing this thing. I'm making her do the thing that absolutely kills me, or I'm making him do the thing that is going to ultimately make him do what my deepest wound is. And most of us are unaware that we're doing it. Once we're aware we're doing it, then we can make art with it. We can play with it. We can fuck from there.
Right.
We can do all kinds of cool things. But if we're unaware, then we're just going to unconsciously recreate it.
Thank you for listening. And thanks to my amazing team, Ken, Jamie, our interns, Shannon and Jenny, producer Lark and Michael. And thank you everyone so much for subscribing to the show, supporting it, reviewing us on iTunes. We appreciate it. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.